welcome back to another episode of the Hall of Jostis Comic Cast. As always, you've got Above Average Joe here and...
Mighty Mike.
All right. So we're back at it again for another great episode. And what are we focusing on today, Mike?
Oh, man. One of the bigs, one of the greats in my favorite line of mutant Marvels. X-Men God Loves, Man Kills.
Yes, classic X-Men story. Very classic. So I guess let's kick it off and talk about some of the background and history of this particular tale. Well, it was originally published in Marvel Graphic Novel number 5, so it's a contained graphic novel. It was published in 1982, written by Chris Claremont, notable X-Men scribe.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, he pretty much did X-Men from like 71 to 92.
I think he's got the longest run.
Yeah,
contiguous.
Yeah, it's great. And you had Brent Eric Anderson as the artist. Interesting fact here, the original scheduled artist for the book was Neil Adams. And he had contributed about six pages of art.
Yeah.
So pretty much most of the first issue was baked. And then he moved off the project and Brent came on and kind of restarted.
And they're
from
still
there.
Available. You can see that he submitted them to Marvel. He already had them finished.
They're out there.
They're in the collected graphic novel.
Yeah, you can see them. And they're gorgeous.
I mean, oh, they are. Neil Adams. It's just penciling, but still, it's beautiful.
Also, there's some cool trivia about this story. For the longest time, it was actually outside continuity.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a part of traditional X-Men lore. And it wasn't until about 2003 that this story became part of X-Men canon in the Marvel Universe, which we'll talk later about some of the impacts and how that changes the scope of the story, because some very heavy concepts are introduced here.
Absolutely. And they we'll talk about how they influence, but they were like, there was a reason it was outside of continuity for so long, because they were like, this is some sticky subjects to talk about.
Exactly. So it became canon in 2003, and because of the X-Men timeline at that particular time, it was placed between issues 167 and 168. It's kind of Cyclops' last appearance with the team at that time until after X-Factor, or until Dark Phoenix saga.
Yes.
So that's where they were able to place it, because Cyclops departs in issue number 168. Mm-hmm. It also had a kind of a thematic sequel in Extreme X-Men number 25 to 30, called God Loves, Man Kills 2.
That's creative.
Pretty much all you need to know about it.
Yeah, that's very true.
But it also served as the primary inspiration for X2 X-Men United.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously with some very notable changes, because, you know, Fox and X-Men. But it was kind of the raw skeleton for that film. And then they just tacked on a whole bunch of Wolverine stuff, because
the whole
Fox
Wolverine all
and
the time.
X-Men.
Logan. And
all the Logan.
Also notably, like, it was only the fifth Marvel graphic novel in the line of graphic novels. It was the first X-Men graphic novel. It was literally Marvel was making a big move for do more mature stories, because they were like, this was during the time of the Comics Code Authority, and they wanted to buck the Comics Code Authority.
Oh, absolutely.
Which graphic novels are not governed by the Comics Code Authority.
This was at
they're
the time when both
comics.
Marvel and DC were pushing that envelope and breaking away from Comics Code Authority. And with it being issue number 5, it had been like New Mutants for a couple of issues. And then I can't remember what issue number 3 was.
I can't recall.
You had this one hit. This is definitely one of the more notable.
I just love how
the
they were like,
lines.
Loophole, it's the Comic Code Authority, but it's not a comic, it's a graphic novel. Yeah, we'd have to follow your rules. Suck it.
All right, so with that brilliant segue, Mike, you want to give us the 30,000-foot view of the plot here?
Okay, so I really want you guys to read this, so I'm not going to give too much away. I'm going to give you, like, a brief synopsis, and we're going to kind of go into the tones and themes of what's handled in this story here. But the basic setup is that there is a, just like the premise of X2, you have Reverend William Stryker, except in this case he's not a general, he's a reverend. He is still a military man. He was in the military. He was I believe he was dishonorably discharged after the death of his wife.
He kind of earned it.
He did have a mutant son. We can talk a little bit later about what happened to that. But he's become a fundamentalist evangelical, and he is on a crusade against mutants. And he wants to do everything in his power to stop them.
And by stop them, you mean what, Mike?
Wipe them off the face of the earth.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
That's subtle.
To completely eradicate them. And it's one of the few times where we have, because it's early on in X-Men canon, this was revealed in the very first few panels, we have a team up with Magneto, and the X-Men and Magneto on the same side protecting all of mutant kind in the story. And it really, really hits some hard and heavy tones. It makes you think. It challenges you. And we're going to tell you exactly why you should read it and pick it up today, tomorrow. It's one of those comics that sadly is still very relevant today. Chris Claremont actually, he wanted to make a story that wouldn't be relevant. He specifically stated 20 years from now. And here we are 30 years from now, almost on 40. And it's still entirely relevant.
Irony!
A bit more relevant than it should be. Absolutely. So, Joe, you want to take us into one of the first tones themes we're dealing with today?
Yeah, there's two major themes in this story. And the first of which is racial tension and racism itself. This was the first time where anti-mutant sentiment was directly linked to racism.
Absolutely. They made no qualms about it. Yeah, there was no telling what that was supposed to mean.
That was not underplayed. It wasn't toned down. It was not a dotted line. It was a bold line. Mm-hmm. Anti-mutant equals racist.
Yes.
And that was a brand new concept. I mean, X-Men comics had always kind of played this, oh, everyone's afraid of mutants, and that's why they're that's why they're reacting. And it's like, no, this is just racism, plain and simple.
Oof.
And they do it in a couple of ways. Now, I am going to give you some specific scenes from the story that demonstrate the racism. So, slight spoilers, but it is not going to take away from your experience.
No, not at all.
So, it opens up with...
If anything, it'll buffet you because now you know what's coming.
Yeah.
Brace yourself.
You kind of need that buffer because as Mike and I went back and read this again for the first time in about 10, 15 years
I can't believe I read this as an early teenager. Damn, man.
We were both just like, huh. So our story begins with two young black children being chased by a murderous mob because, that's not iconic imagery at all.
Nope.
And they're both mutants. Both of they're cornered. They're terrified. You find out both of their parents have already been killed. Mm-hmm. Both of their powers activate because, mutant powers tend to spike in extreme tension. And, being chased to death, that'll probably do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're gunned down.
Yeah. Children they're killed instantly.
Kids gunned down on panel. It's not just a reference. No, they are blown away. This is like page 2 of the comic.
Yeah.
They're killed in the playground. They're strung up with the chains of the swings.
Mm-hmm.
And on the the seat of the swing is etched the word Mutie.
Yeah, right across the chest. I don't know if we mentioned, but these are two black kids who...
And I'll get to the evocative use of Mutie here in a little bit because there's another instance where...
The imagery alone, man, it's heavy.
Oh, the imagery alone is heavy, and it gets even heavier because they're found by Magneto. And this takes on an extra weight here because Magneto, being a Holocaust survivor, has already seen his people, tried to be eradicated once. Mm-hmm. And now he's seeing people come for them again. And it's a very important reason that Magneto's the one to find them. Because it sets the tone and the stakes of the story right off the bat. You see that this is a fight for survival against this kind of ideology. And we have a lot of other callbacks to the concept of racism throughout the story. There's another element where after an argument where someone, spouts off some very anti-mutant hate speech at Kitty Pryde, and her dance instructor's trying to calm her down, and she's a strong black woman who's just trying to calm her down, and Kitty whips around and says, "What if he had called you a—" again, used in speech on the panel,
fully spelled out. Like,
they
want you to know that the weight of the word Mutie, like they'd have no qualms about it, and they purposely use that word because they're like, you need to know in this context, in this world, that the word beauty is just as bad as that word. Like, yeah, that's what it means.
Not something I use or say lightly. No. I did not want to say it in this podcast, but no. We had to do it in order to really establish
the context
here, because this story does not play around. It throws this directly in your face. There are other elements throughout the entire story where that line has been drawn. The word beauty pops up constantly in the rest of the story, and it causes you to cringe and to wince because you know what it means. You know what it's the allegory for. Yes. And it having that context up front makes the story so much more relevant and so much more painful.
And with in the historical context of how long that civil rights have gone hand in hand with the X-Men, and that Magneto was modeled after Malcolm X and Xavier's modeled after Martin Luther King Jr. as analogs for the civil rights movement.
Well, the X-Men have always been the civil rights book. I mean, that's what it was.
The X-Men is, especially when Claremont took over, has always been like the crew of the Star Trek Enterprise. It's been represented by all nationalities and ethnicities, and even denominations of religion. It's a giant melting pot. That's what the X-Men is, and it's represented the downtrodden.
As long as you aren't Thunderbird.
Prosecuted against.
Sorry, I had to lighten the tone here, man.
Damn it, man.
But yeah, to Mike's point, it shows how diverse the X-Men are, not just in terms of them being mutants and their powers, but ethically, racially,
culturally,
religiously. I mean, there's a lot of variation within the team. I mean, Kitty Pryde's a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
She's Jewish as well.
Nightcrawler's a devout Catholic.
Yeah.
There's atheists, there's different denominations of Christianity. There's agnostic. Everybody's represented, and they all live together in harmony without trying to kill each other.
And they all react to this same threat in the same way. They all immediately recognize the stakes, that they understand that this isn't the usual, we hate mutants because they terrify us. Mm-hmm. They understand that they're under attack.
This is hate, not fear.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something completely new. And Mike, why don't you take it from there?
Absolutely. And I want to go into a little bit now about who's stoking those racial tensions and where they're coming from, and the second major theme of this book that I like to really focus on, because it really resonates with me, and that's fundamentalism, extreme fundamentalism. And Reverend William Riker is a...
Striker,
William Riker. Oh my God.
Sorry. William Mike's Riker. A bit of a TNG fan.
I just talked about Star Trek. I got a little Riker in me. But, Reverend Striker is a piece of work. And Chris Claremont, in his writing, in his letters and interviews about this storyline, specifically says he was influenced to write this story with the fundamentalist slant, because it was around this time he was seeing the rise of TV evangelists and fundamentalists across the country, and how they were saying that their denomination was either my way or the highway, and how it was influenced and much mirroring some things that were happening in the Islamic world with fundamentalism. And he did not like it. Things with Billy Graham and Pat Robertson and other characters like that who were becoming the TV fundamentalists, who were literally saying, like, the Bible is the one true only path to salvation, and if you don't believe it 100%, then you are the outgroup, you are the enemy, you are the opposition. We should take over the nation, we should lead the nation in morals, and you either are with us or against us. And that very much resonated with him, because he's like, that's not the way he is a Christian. And he's like, that's not the way I see my faith, about being about outgroups and in-groups. It's supposed to be embracing. And there's multiple paths to salvation, not just one denomination.
It's important to point out here that Chris Claremont is a man of faith.
Like, yes.
This isn't some, you know, I hate religion storyline.
No, he is absolutely... He
is...
He was motivated to speak out against this because he felt that they were discriminatory. That they were saying that the other denominations don't matter. They're not true. There is only... Evangelicalism is the one true path to salvation. It's like... He's like, now he's dismissive. They're making all the other the denominations, the outgroups, let alone different religions altogether. What happens when he said that every war ever has had a person on one side praying to the God for victory and a person on the other side praying on the God for victory? And if they both believe in the same God, what happens? And by one person saying that there is no other way to salvation, that's fundamentalism. And the whole idea of everybody else being on the outgroup resonated with him so much with the X-Men and mutants, because mutants and the X-Men are a perpetual outgroup. And that's the way they've been epitomized throughout their comic history. And there's several highlights in this book that are just gut-wrenching. And the key Stryker's argument is that man is made in God's image, and mutants don't look like man, so therefore they're not in God's image, therefore they weren't made by God, and they are spawns of the devil and Satan, and therefore they must be eradicated off the face of the earth because they're hellspawn.
Well, it's interesting because he draws that line that they're less than human, which again mm-hmm. harkens back to the racism comp.
Yes.
You know, three-fifths man.
Mm-hmm.
It draws that parallel.
The historical context.
That historical context adds so much weight to this book.
It does, and it's hard to even talk about because it like I said, like we both just said that when we reread this, we were just like, oh man, this is heavy.
I read it on a plane, and I had to like come up for air.
Like it's good. It makes you think. It challenges you in a great way. You're supposed to feel uncomfortable because when you're uncomfortable, you're thinking about things, you're questioning things, and that's
I had
what
to put the book in the fridge. It was like an episode of Friends.
You're like, oh god, I'm done with it. Cool off, man. Cool off. And there is a really iconic panel.
There's several
iconic panels. One where he's trying to brainwash Charles Xavier, and he's being crucified on a cross on top of the Twin Towers, which is just really hard to read and see.
Still to this day.
And all the other, his X-Men are portrayed as demons trying to destroy him and hurt him. And like I said, Chris Claremont, and as Joe reiterated, is a man of faith. So before he wrote this, he reread his entire Bible twice.
Yeah.
And so the quotes in scripture that Reverend Stryker uses for his motivation, and that are in the background of some of these scenes that he's using as justification, are direct scriptures from the Bible. Yeah. And they are contextually correct. So it just goes to show how some people can twist the words of the Bible to justify anything throughout history, from slavery to war to many other things.
And also, I mean, that's what kind of gives this book a sense of mm-hmm. realism.
It is.
There are direct ties to things that existed here yes. in the real world. I mean, the accuracy of the Bible quotes, the fact that there's like ABC Dateline, like it references real
yes.
world
and
events and contents.
He starts off as a subtlety. I mean, he's espousing this stuff that says that, you know, maybe X-Men, maybe mutants aren't human. But then Logan points it out, the inevitable conclusion to that line of thought, that if mutants aren't human, then they don't have human rights, and they don't have civil rights, and they can't
yep.
vote, and they don't have any protection under the law if they're not human. And there's, like I got to earlier, the iconic scene where they're one of the confrontations with Stryker, where Cyclops is trying to just reason with him, and this man is unreasonable. He's a fundamentalist. His very nature is unreasonable. And he tells him, we're all just men like you. I'm human, you're human. And then he starkly points to Nightcrawler, and he says, you call that human? You call that man? And that's where Kitty Pryde, who's like, I wish I was half the human that Nightcrawler was.
Nightcrawler is...
he's one of the greatest
people
like I know.
He's like the best X-Men.
Yes.
Like, he is...
he is a moral center point.
Without him, the team usually, like, goes into a tailspin. Like,
yeah.
He's like the moral center of the X-Men. One of the best of them.
Absolutely.
Sorry,
so now we've thoroughly pulled on your heartstrings and made you a little uncomfortable, let's see if we can pull you back in and really tell you why you should read this book. Joe, you want to lead off with how this book affected you and some of the impacts it's had and rereading it in today's climate?
Man, it hurt.
Yeah.
It hurt.
It tights in the chest.
Yeah, it's a gut punch. No, it's a gut punch that...
it's a wake-up call.
It's a gut punch that you need to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it needs to hurt you. If you come away from this book not understanding, not feeling it, you didn't read it properly. Like, you need to go back and reread it and really take your time.
Yes.
And that's something I want to tell you. When you read this book, take your time. Do not just go, oh, it's only this so many pages, and flip through it and, you know, speed read.
Mm-hmm.
Really soak it in. The imagery is evocative and thought-provoking. The dialogue, you need to let everything you know, have the appropriate weight and time to settle in. I mean, there's moments in this book where it's actually baked in, where they take you out of the severe moments and give you some classic X-Men stuff for a few pages just to let you come up for air.
Like, literally, it hits you so heavy in the first 10 pages. Just, I mean, even read the first 10 pages and you're like, fuck.
that whole opening scene, like, I'm like, the first 2 to 3 pages where the stakes are set are still to this day some of the most gripping pieces of comic lore. In terms of how it affected me, it had me looking at the events and climate that we live in today with a heavy heart. Because at the time this was written, this was meant to be a wake-up call, a don't let us get to this point.
And again, it shows how powerful comics and graphic novels are as a medium for spreading messages and information and ideas. And how
they're not negative just superhero the comics code
authority was for so long by tamping down all these mature themes. These stories needed to be told.
Oh yeah, and this is one that to this day needs to be told, and it saddens me that it's maintained its relevance.
Yeah, it really is. It saddens Chris Claremont.
It's heartbreaking, but the simple fact that here we are 30, almost 40 years after its release, and it is...
It was supposed to be a warning
it's
siren.
It's more relevant like now than it was at the time.
To let people know, don't let this happen.
Yeah, this was the shot across the bow, and here it is. And it's basically really, it's still 100% relevant. Yes. And that's heartbreaking and terrifying. It's sobering, really.
It is. Oh, my goodness. I have one other important note about talking about the relevancy with today. The police in this book are the good guys. The police are the good guys. The police defend the X-Men against the hatred of the mob and the bigotry of the racism and the fundamentalism. The police say, your people are wanting to say that you're going to kill all them. And the police at the penultimately, at almost the end of the story, are the heroes of this book. It's just the presentation and how we've changed over the years is just so stark. That's such an important point that
I agree because that is such an important point.
Mm-hmm.
But in contrast to the other massive points of this book, it almost gets washed out. I agree. Yeah. Like, I didn't remember that until you started
talking
about it.
Until we talk about like the relevance of today.
Yeah, this book I would describe this book as sobering.
Yes.
You do. This is not a book you feel good coming away from, but you come away with the appropriate emotional weight. And it's a book that stays with you. Like, I could sit here and talk about the several hundred issues of X-Men that I've read, and still to this day, even before I went back and read it again for this episode, still was in the forefront of my mind in terms of X-Men.
Like, it hit me hard when I was a teenager, but like I said, I can't believe I read it as a teenager. It's been so long, and I think how relevant it still is made it much more impactful rereading it as an adult. Damn, like Joe can't put it in any other better way. It's a gut punch. It's a slap to the face. It's a wake up call. Things don't change unless people change them.
Absolutely.
And we still need people like Chris Claremont to put these kind of things out there. And that's why when people say that. Like, get your politics out of my comics and everything.
Oh, the whole comics game thing?
Yeah.
Well, no,
politics is life.
It's an ugly truth, and I dare to think that with the state of politics and political themes, political and social themes in comics today, people would not want this book printed.
No. No, they wouldn't.
That
this
hurts
would be
me.
A banned book
this
or
would
a
be
book
a banned
burning.
Book.
It feels like in a way we've taken 2 steps forward and 3 steps back.
Yeah, it saddens me. So while I can understand a desire to not have extreme political stories being told, because let's face it, there have been some that have been nothing but pure agenda, and it's like, really, you're not even telling a story here. This is one that tells a story that needs to be told.
Absolutely. Going without saying that we've talked about this before, but this was written by a man of faith who felt that his faith was under attack, and it's rang true with the themes of X-Men and Magneto and the being a Holocaust survivor and having people who their face were under attack.
Yeah, it really points out the speed with which toxicity can invade a point of view.
Bigotry, hate, fear, ignorance.
And how powerful those are, and their ability to override any discerning mm-hmm. sense of logic.
And I specifically said the word ignorance because most people think of ignorance as a bad thing and an insult. It's not. It's just lack of knowledge in something.
There's a certain innocence in ignorance.
It's not wanting to investigate your world and everything. I have two college degrees. I couldn't tell you how a car engine works because I'm ignorant in automobile mechanics. I'm okay with saying that because there's no negative connotation with the word. I am completely ignorant of that.
I'm completely ignorant as it applies to, you know, particle physics.
Yes. The
I have read
the pejorative
some certain stuff, but
is
right off the head.
Idiot or stupid. Ignorance is something that's got away from us in this culture today. That it's okay when you acknowledge you have ignorance of something. That's okay.
Yeah,
that gives you possibility and experience to learn. Or if you're ignorant of somebody else's experience, so like in this, people can't understand what it is to be a mutant, or people can't understand what it is to be a Mexican American or an African American because they've never walked a mile in their shoes. They're ignorant.
Well, I mean, even to that point, there's moments in here where the X-Men are really fighting to understand their point of view, because
mm-hmm.
Xavier makes pretty well known that you have to understand where your opponent is and meet them there.
Yeah,
and you talked about Cyclops' speech. Kitty mm-hmm. makes a brilliant mm-hmm. speech in this book, trying mm-hmm. to understand and appeal to that side and get to the fear at the heart of the anger.
Yes.
And these are themes that are still relevant to this day and will stick with you in this book.
This is a story and experience that almost broke Charles Xavier's dream. The Charles Xavier who was Martin Luther King personified, I have a dream that man and mutant can live in harmony together. This almost broke him, seeing this hate and the racism and the fundamentalism, and he almost went to Magneto's side to join him in the violence of maybe we can't live in harmony, maybe we have to make a place for ourselves through violence and force. If that doesn't tell you how amazing and impactful the story
yeah.
is that you need to read, then I don't know what else I can tell you. But you have if you're an X-Men fan, if you're a Marvel fan, if you're a fan of good stories, and you want to see something that's a time capsule that still has ridiculous relevance today, you need to read God Loves, Man Kills.
Absolutely. And also, give yourself some time to breathe afterward.
Yeah.
With that, that's pretty much the base of our episode here. So don't forget, we do
Deep
have,
you know,
collectively, woosah. don't forget, we do have our viewer request special coming up.
Absolutely.
Be sure to reach out to us on Twitter at Hall of Justice. Use the hashtag viewer request. Let us know what you want us to cover.
Tell us what if you want us to do something like ridiculous, like Jabberjaw or something funny to bounce back after this. Just
like an I Hate Fairyland or something.
That's right.
Just something to come back after this.
Tell me a good, like, it's like medicine. It's necessary and it helps you feel better, but damn if it's not bitter going down.
You're not
going
to break into song now, are you? Okay, before my
get
first...
Get us a spoonful of sugar, damn it.
Here we go. Don't forget, you can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Hall mm-hmm. of Justice. You can check out our website, hallofjustice.com, for
Absolutely.
All kinds of
we got
new
articles
and exclusive
coming up
content.
Every week. So, look forward to the future. I'm gonna have some Mighty Mike mini episodes coming out.
Yeah, we got
some
a whole
fun
bunch
and interesting
of new
topics
content coming out this year. So strap in, guys. It's gonna be fun.
All right, as always, I'm Mighty Mike,
and I'm Above Average Joe,
and this has been
the Hall of Justice.